Cardinals lands in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans, and welcome to your semi-late edition of a recap show. I'm the publisher of Bison Report, Ross Hockman. My best Anchorman impression there, but it's been a week. I was gone covering the Monday Night Football game in Green Bay, and Zach was here holding down the fort, but not a high stress situation because is there a game this weekend for us to preview?
There is not.
There is not a game this weekend, folks, for us to preview. So we have time to talk a little football recruiting. We have time to talk about some of the things that we've seen. Really, I think, have a chance to, of course, we'll talk about the Towson game because I think it's important. But other than that, I think after we get done, I think we can chat about some broader topics. Sure. Because we do have a 3-game sample size. We have 180 minutes that we have seen now of 2021 Bison football, and we can kind of make a few less hot takes, more medium takes. Takes that are at least somewhat born of knowledge, born of watching these
based
games.
On
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, want to just address everybody that reached out to me and to us about the Flow Sports situation and just say that we understand your pain and that there really wasn't anything it's a bad situation. It's an awful look for the CAA.
And from what I've heard, I'm thankful that I was stuck in a car listening to our friend Jeff Culhane because it was absolutely abysmal to watch.
It was rough. The announcing was not great, which doesn't help. And I've talked to a couple people, and I know like Brad Jones tweeted out the exact same thing. Brad Jones, who helps out at Bison 1660. Great, great friend of Bison Report, Brad Jones. Former Bison Report employee, Brad Jones.
All around good guy,
Brad all around good guy, Brad Jones. He said something that honestly is very true, and that is that both play-by-play and color analysis live on a hot mic about something that's going on right in front of you is so much more difficult than I think the average fan ever gives anybody credit for. But there is still good and bad, and this was bad.
Absolutely. We've talked about that before, like just being able to process what's going on and give commentary is not easy. But from what I heard from everybody, they weren't even doing that for the most part. So, a little bit of enthusiasm. And I don't know how you feel, but when I'm listening to an away broadcast, I like a little bit of homerism. I like hearing
that. Well, they did have that.
Right.
They did have that.
Just not in a way that was enjoyable for everybody else. Like I said, I listened to Jeff call it on the radio.
Yeah.
I was stuck in the car after selling some sauce.
Would you like to hear the general, what I got generally from the color guy? 4,000.
Let's hear the impression.
The whole game. He was so annoyed to be there and that they were playing the way that they were and that NDSU was as good as they were and that Christian Watson was as fast as he was. He just was not about it.
I was talking to my boy Quinn Allo, and he said he thought he was going to throw up on the broadcast when he started hitting the gritty in the back of the end zone.
Oh, 100%. I mean, 100%. For some of you, this, I guess, will be breaking news, but for most of you it will not, because we've tweeted about it, and I'm going to work on, I just about pulled the West Fargo card on you and told you to get Carson's ass in the studio, but a big deal. Carson Hagerle, do you know if that's right? Did I just say, or do you not know?
That's right.
Hagerle, okay. Yep. So Carson Hagerle, a wide receiver athlete, 6'3", 180, out of West Fargo. Believe his sister's a volleyball player at Jamestown. I think his dad was either a very good athlete or actually played here.
He played ball at NASU.
Okay, yeah. So a legacy kid, but not just a legacy kid. This is not, and I don't mean any disrespect to Ty Satter, but it's not a similar situation. Like, Ty deserved to be a Bison, and sure, I think will be a player, but this isn't a deal where it's like, oh, that's cool, legacy kid. This is the number one recruit, folks, in the history of North Dakota State football from a ratings perspective. Doesn't mean that Carson Hagerly is going to be the best Bison of all time. No, there's a very, very small chance that that's going to happen. But from a recruiting service rankings perspective, Carson is a three-star. He is the number 50 athlete in the country, not player, but football player designated as an athlete. He's not the number 50 overall player, but he is the number one kid in the state of North Dakota, and he is a three-star with a 86.2 rating, which is the highest of any recruit in the history of North Dakota State. As far as interest, Minnesota, Nebraska, and Wisconsin have been sniffing around, have not pulled the trigger on an offer at this time, but Wyoming has, Utah State has, Toledo has, Nevada has, Army has, and then basically every Dakota school that wanted a shot at Hagerly, you know, made the offer as well. But this kid is not just cool because he's a legacy kid, is not just cool because he's a West Fargo kid. He's cool because it's a big damn deal.
Yeah, I mean, going back to my experience, I was the number one ranked kid in North Dakota too coming out, and my biggest offer was NDSU. So for him to garner that kind of attention coming out is really, really impressive. It shows you the kid's a baller.
Yeah, very, very impressive. And can we just talk about this potential? I mean, I'm going to have to get like some 11 and 10 personnel stuff over to Coach Roll and start the spread install, because you talk about studs. We just mentioned all-time commit rankings at NDSU. Again, guys, this is an inexact science. You've got guys like Cameron Hackle and Sabian Clark right there in the all-time top eight, and it just didn't work out. Right. And that's, we just looked at Kansas State. It was like, oh my God, all their best guys of all time are none of their best players of all time.
Right.
But it's normally there is a corollary. There is a relation that usually the best recruits by far end up being the best players.
Sure.
You do get the guys that don't work out, but like Rashawn Gary, that was a thing that was going to get figured out. Vince Young, that was a thing that was going to get figured out. And not that Carson's any one of these guys, but you've got Carson Hagerly, the number one all-time recruit in the history of the program, and Makai Collins, the number three all-time recruit in the history of the program, that are going to join forces with Cole Payton and Bryce Lance, who are likely to reserve their redshirt status. This passing offense is kind of scary.
Yeah, T-Roll's head might explode. They keep recruiting all these good receivers and going to force them to actually throw the ball more. But, you know, I'm excited to see that receiver room. And, you know, as they say, the rich keep getting richer. But that's what happens when you put together the portfolio and the tradition that NDSU has.
They do, and it's an interesting one to me. And I've been impressed with this class overall, but it's an interesting deal just because I've spoken to so many young men over the, goodness, seven years.
You're old.
So I've spoken to so many young men over the 7 years that I've been doing this, that whether it's South Dakota State or Mac School or whoever ends up getting them at the receiver position, because they told me that I'll see 100 targets and at NDSU I'll see 50 and I'll have to block and this and that. And you do certainly have highly touted receivers that end up here, but you also see guys that weren't. You know, sure. Darius Shepherd was pulled out of South Dakota's commits.
Yeah.
Zach Vra, I think, was a pretty big recruiting deal being Mr. Football in Minnesota, but he didn't have a ton of huge offers. Obviously, you know, Ryan Smith, a guy that didn't have a ton of massive offers elsewhere.
Right.
There are not a ton of super high level wide receiver recruits coming through here, and I think part of that has had to do with play style. These guys are saying to hell with play style.
Yeah, I think that's the cool part is you're getting these talented dudes who just want to win.
Yeah.
You're getting true competitors, and that's all they care about is how can they fit in to help the team win. And I think that's kind of what you're getting with these high-level dudes because when they do get their shot, you know they're going to ball out.
For sure. And, I mean, even a guy like Christian Watson, one of the most athletically gifted players to ever walk into NDSU, he's not going to see 100 targets.
Right.
And, I think South Dakota State would throw it to him 14 times a game.
Every play?
Yeah. So it is cool, like you said, to see these kids get bought in. And Hagerly is just another example. I think they were fortunate that he was a legacy kid. I think honestly they were probably fortunate that his sister is playing college athletics around here, and it's just cool for mom and dad to get to see him play. But
right.
Hey, Christian Watson is on the Senior Bowl watch list.
Yeah.
Jim Nagy was at, or at least a representative of Jim Nagy's, was at Towson, North Dakota State to watch Cordell Volson and to watch Christian Watson.
Right.
You can get to the NFL at wide receiver playing at North Dakota State, as Shep has explained.
Right. And
as a zero star. I mean, Shep was a nobody.
And a dude who didn't put up ginormous numbers in college
no.
either. So, I mean, if you can ball, they know who to look for and they know how to look for you. And I think we've proven that with the track record that we've put in guys in the league. So it's good to see guys buy into that and not kind of, fall to the wayside because they're promised 100 targets a year somewhere else.
For sure, for sure.
Across midfield, a foot race, 30, 20, 10, trot in there, baby!
35-7, that was kind of poetic. I know Trev loved that.
Yeah, right.
What were your takeaways? For me, I understand, obviously, that you can't get more dominant than what they did to Valparaiso. Mm-hmm. I am more impressed by the Towson result because that's a team, and I don't know how good they'll be in the CAA, but I felt like that was a legitimate FCS football team.
I would agree.
And they did not belong on the same field.
No.
And I can basically guarantee you none of their guys are listening to this right now, but if they are, I don't mean that as disrespectfully, I guess, as it sound, but they were dominated. Like, go turn on the tape. There's no argument.
No.
So that was the most impressive thing to me because when they played Albany, there may have been a reasonable spread in the score, but it was not an ass kick. Like, NDSU took the throttle off. I mean, Cam Miller had three drives?
Yep.
So you're throttling down on the road against an FCS major conference opponent. I think most people view the CAA as the number two conference in the country, and that game was just not close.
I think it's kind of coming back to form of like these guys have a little dog in them again after the result of last year.
Yeah.
And like you said, Albany was first game. Who knows how that game goes if we play them in week three or week four. But, I mean, like you said, Towson is a good team with tradition who takes pride in how they play football. And, like you said, they just got their ass kicked on Saturday.
They did. And that, I think, for me, was never a question, right? I never questioned the fight of this team because I've known the staff for long enough. I know a lot of you kids. And the way that, not even, honestly, for me, not even the way that it ended against Sam Houston, but really the disrespect that was shown by South Dakota State on Gate City Bank Field. For me, it was like, I know that will not sit right.
And, you'll get the company line that week when that game comes up from everybody you talk to.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact, just from being in that program, that those guys went to bed with that in their mind every night.
Sure.
And every workout this summer where Coach Kramer's screaming at you, it's 100 degrees, that's still in the back of their mind fueling them. And I think it's going to be a different result. It's kind of jumping ahead, obviously.
No, right.
But I'm excited, and I like that, it wasn't falling victim to a circumstance of poor us, poor COVID, all this stuff. It's like, put your hard hat on, we're going back to work.
And honestly, I'm getting off topic by bringing, but what I'll say is this. The point that I was trying to make is that that result, that the spring, I think, can really be defined by that loss. Certainly dominating UND was cool, and you know, getting to where, getting as far as they got with all the things that they were faced is a tremendous accomplishment.
Right.
But I think you always knew that the chip was going to be there. The anger was going to be there. The displeasure with South Dakota State, the fire. There was no question of the fire. My question was talent.
Right.
Was it's largely now, I know Tomerik is there, and I understand that QP is there, and I understand, you know, that they added a Gerard Vines and et cetera, et cetera. But by and large, and I think if we dug into the numbers a little bit, we have numbers, by the way, at least for Albany. That's very cool. Exciting stuff. If we dug into the numbers, you would see that more than 90, throwing out Quincy, because I don't think that's fair, but throwing out Quincy, more than 90% of the snaps that you're seeing are guys from last year's team. This is not a, because you will see an Illinois State or a Jacksonville State do that and just be like, hey, we need seven new starters. Go find them.
Right.
That didn't happen. So for me, the question is, okay, can you beat teams that you lost to with the same dudes?
Right. And I think they're proving that, you know, obviously we talked about notable additions, especially number two, kids.
Right.
Kids proven to be pretty special so far this year. But I would never question the fight or the Bison pride that my guys have, especially like those are my brothers. Those are the guys I played with. But it was just, it was almost like we lost a little bit of swag in the spring. Like we didn't play like the Bison brand of football, where it's like, we're going to punch you in the mouth no matter who you put on the field. And now we just have dudes executing with that kind of level of piss and vinegar, and they're angry at whoever is lined up against them. And it's showing on the scoreboard so far this fall.
I agree, and I think the biggest two places that I've seen it are the offensive line. It just was not a great spring. It was not you did not see guys getting MF'd the way you are normal. You're used to,
right.
And I think you would agree there. But that to me is understandable. You lose a second round pick in Dylan Radins that was never supposed to be a part of the spring, but was supposed to be a part of the 2020 team.
Right.
You lose Rado. You lose AJ Blazek, somebody that you and I respect. And we got no issues here with Dan Larson. That's not the point. But you lose Blaz, you lose Rado, and you're expected to just fix it on the fly. And you're dealing with multiple injuries on that. And then the front seven just didn't play up to their potential either.
Yeah, speaking especially to the Ram room, because I was in that, and there was just a lot of stuff you can't overcome in that position. Like you said, depth was an issue. I love Coach Larson, but it's not easy to be an offensive line coach at North Dakota State. We've talked about that.
Right.
So his first O-line job was at North Dakota State. That's a lot of pressure for a guy too. And, you know, you add in a couple losses that we shouldn't have, and now all of a sudden it's like, oh, the success of the team is on the back of this room. So that just adds even more pressure and it compounds. But
oh, by the way, Jake Rock, go handle it. Mason Miller, go handle it.
Right. You know? It's not easy for those young cats to just jump in and play. And Mason Miller's first start was in a semifinal game to go to the national championship.
Right.
And that's circumstances outside of our control. And I know nobody in that building would make that excuse, but it's kind of silly to look at what happened
and pretend it didn't happen.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so what I'll say about all that is I get it 100%. You tell me, Ross, it's Albany, Valparaiso, and Towson. You can still kind of tell, though. And I get it, man. The first test in Grand Forks is going to be a real one.
Right.
Because that's a legitimate. I haven't looked, I guess, just because they don't play till next week. Is what, UND ranked 7th or 8th right now?
Yep.
Are they in that range? So I mean,
somewhere around there.
They are. Well, honestly, for all intents and purposes, basically from a national perspective, I don't think Vegas will see it that way, by the way, but from a national perspective, they're viewed as NDSU's equals or close to it. Because if you got one team ranked 4 and the other team ranked 7 and the game is where 7 is,
yeah.
Usually that's in the mind of the nation, that's a push.
Right.
Or, you know.
All square.
Again. I don't think Las Vegas is going to see it that way, and I don't think that game is going to go that way, but that's, we can do UND Hate Week next week. We got content next week.
Are you trying
to
get out of here by?
I'm not trying to get out of here, but I mean, here, you know, here we do have 2 weeks of content to create.
I'll let the hate boil for a while.
Yeah. And we got to get some folks on here too, because this is the first game there in 18 years.
Yeah.
So, we got to
bring some old heads in.
We should bring some old heads in. My cousin Chuck hasn't been in here. That's a ram for you right there too. Yeah. My cousin Chuck hasn't been here yet. We'll maybe talk to him about Grand Forks, though. He didn't have fun up there. I don't think he had a lot of fun up there. Memories. But so ultimately, that's the test, right? You cannot feel better about Code Green right now. You cannot feel better about the offensive line right now. And now I think I really want to see them against a top 10 opponent.
Me too. And it couldn't have timed out perfect. More perfect, going into a Towson game, which is a relatively good, sharp enough game. If we played like crap, we were going to go out of there with an L. So yeah. We played well at some level. You get a bye week, get everybody back, get the legs back underneath you. And then, like you said, you hope in the valley against, it depends what era of person you ask, but that's our biggest rival far as people who they hate the most in the valley. But like you said, it's at home, or it's at Grand Forks. It's at the Alaris. It's UND, top 10 team.
Yep.
And they've proven they're a good squad as well. And I think it's going to be a good test. And, like you said, just kind of see if this team is legit, or if we just kind of saw lesser opponents that we played the first 3 weeks.
It's Wednesday.
Yeah.
People are probably getting this on a Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to break down like play by play.
Sure.
Because this is not an immediate reaction anymore. What were your biggest takeaways? I think I was happy to get and unfortunately we got the entire Christian Watson experience, the concentration drop and the bomb,
right?
And the jets that literally made guys look like they were standing still again. That dude's a weapon. Fun for me to see Phoenix get involved, get a carry.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you, I guess, what was your biggest takeaway from that game? Getting a chance to rewatch and kind of getting into it. What did you take away from that game? Maybe just more from a 20,000 foot view than a what happened last Saturday view. What was your biggest takeaway?
Well, purely just on the fact that it was the first real away trip in a long time, going out that far to Maryland and, handling business the way they did. It's not easy to stay focused and go out and beat a relatively good FCS team 35-7. So that was good to see that they went out and handled business the way they did. And then saw some real violence on Saturday. Guys were getting thrown. There was carnage. There were bodies on the floor. And that is always what I like to see from Bison football.
For sure. I was really impressed with how active they were defensively.
Yeah.
Hanky, you know, we mentioned as a guy that's been a number of years in the program, I think he is better with fewer snaps.
Yeah.
I think their ability to keep his workload to 30 snaps instead of 55 is a big-time deal. And 47 is no slouch, but I just think that that's a young man with miles on the tires.
Old Hank is he's an old dog. So, you know, like you said, if you can keep him and still be effective at 30 snaps, why would you do that rather than – you know, wear him out for 55 and drag him out through this long valley season that's coming.
For sure. So I was impressed by that. But my number one takeaway from Saturday was Quincy.
Yeah.
Because he hit – so we still got to hit that sail, too. We got I noticed that – I think he missed that throw three times just in that game.
Yeah. You texted me every time, too. You know, I know if he hits that sail route, Ross can die a happy man.
Oh, my goodness. But – the throw to Kobe made me want to be a better man.
The back shoulder throw to Lupke.
Oh, Lipke. My God. And the bomb to Christian was on the money. But the throws to Kobe and to Hunter were just special.
Number two is kind of finding his own.
Yeah. And
I
like so
how he's playing right
I really now. Love the confidence. And if you, you know, because, and I'm here, we're going to trash your boy Zeb again. But. Like
we
to me, yeah. Okay, fine. I am, but you can see what's going on. Like if so, last year's team they got to where they got with average at best quarterback play.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, and that's, I'm just like, and there were bad games too.
But I can objectively say that.
Yes. So what I'm saying is you're getting average to slightly below average quarterback play.
Yep.
That team with excellent quarterback play, I think has a chance.
For sure.
This is a better team than that team.
Absolutely. And the quarterback's playing well.
Right. So that's like that. Those are the gears that I'm trying to get turning in people's heads. Yeah. That if Quincy can be a dude and you bring all these guys back and you have that chip on their shoulder and you have legitimate player development from Braylon and Raja and a much deeper backfield and a healthier offensive line. And you add it. Now, Courtney Eubanks is just a dog.
Yeah.
And you know, you've got an actual stone cold stunner on the outside and you feel much better about Dawson Weber and Dom Jones and just on and on and on and on and on. And look, I get it, man. South Dakota State brings back all those cats except for Tetzloff. Sam Houston State brings back all those cats.
Right.
But you have a change at the top for North Dakota State. And so QP was the biggest thing for me from the Towson game.
Yeah, and it's just from a pure fan perspective, it's been something you don't have to worry about for the last 10 years is the quarterback position.
Right.
So when that's a variable that is kind of shaky, you know, every week when it comes to Saturday, you know, you feel a lot different about how that result's going to go every time you play a team that doesn't have to worry about that.
Right.
And now, just from the first 3 weeks of what we're seeing, QP has kind of locked that down. That's a variable that you know he's going to play well on Saturday.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. I don't know. I'm excited. I am very, very, very interested to see how things go at UND because I think it's a perfect test.
Yeah.
It's a team that you smacked last year. It's a team that might be good.
Right.
But if you go into Grand Forks and you win 32-10, that is a statement.
Yeah.
Or
well, the thing about this test is that it's a game that if you go in and don't have your A game, you can absolutely lose.
1,000%.
And I think it's not even close. UND will be the best team that we play this year. So it's a great way to so far.
Okay.
In the first 4 weeks, the best opponent that we have played up to
memed.
This point.
You're going
to
get memed by South Dakota State like I did.
I wish you would have just seen that look that Ross gave me.
Oh, yeah, you're going to end up on Logan Backhouse's Instagram like me.
Oh,
love you, Logan. Love you too, Cade.
I know you're listening. But like you said, it's just great that it happens to be UND. Yeah. And it's up in Grand Forks, and they're number 7 in the country or whatever they are. And if we go in, and like you said, it's 32-10, 35-14, that is a good, good win. And you're happy driving back home down I-29.
For sure. All right, folks, we are not, however, as we have mentioned, going to preview that UND game. That is going to happen next week. Thank you to Big Deck Barbecue, our sponsor. Thanks for Zach. And thank you guys for listening. We will catch you next week.